Okay. Now that we're on the other side of Halloween, I'm officially ready to declare it. It's the holiday season. And shopping early this year is definitely a good idea with all of the shipping uncertainties. Luckily, Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else, so that you can cross the important names off your list and relax. You might have heard me say it before, but I've been known to turn to Uncommon Goods over the years for gifts, especially for my family and close friends, the people I want to treat to something unique, memorable, handmade by creative entrepreneurs, something that will last. I've especially plundered the puzzle categories, bought lots of unusual jewelry and accessories. One time I got my friend's son these little baby booties shaped like tacos that still make me laugh every time I see a picture of them. And bonus, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date, so now is the perfect time to start exploring their site before your new favorite gifts sell out. And while you can take advantage of the limited-time Lorehounds discount and get 15% off. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lorehounds. That's uncommongoods.com/lorehounds for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to the Lorehounds and our special coverage of the PBS miniseries, The American Revolution. I'm David. I'm one of the main hosts of the Lorehounds. And with me for this special project coverage is Loremaster Brian 8063, who's actually a bona fide Loremaster of American history. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm tired. I'm ready for bed.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about it here in a little bit. We're going to be covering this latest installment from Ken Burns and Co. And given the release schedule, we kind of came up with a plan that should work pretty well. It's a 6-episode series. Each episode is 2 hours. And they're starting tonight, November 16th, and then concluding on the 21st, Friday the 21st. And we have to double check. Maybe they released them all, but I know they released episode 1 a little earlier. So maybe that's something we should keep our eyes on because, you know, the earlier we can start watching it, the sooner that we can get this recordings done.
Exactly.
So each night our plan is Brian and I are going to jump right on the microphones, like right after the episode is over, and give our reactions. This is going to be more of a reaction podcast than an analysis podcast. We're not going to take our time and break things down and go detail by detail, but we're just going to kind of go from the gut. And we've got a template that we're going to talk about here in a minute that we're hopefully will help us. So this is a slight departure from our normal analytic process. I'm also going to be fast editing these, so I'm not going to be going into the depths and adding a lot of flourishes to it. I just want to turn these around really quick. So that means we're also going to suspend a lot of the intro and the outro stuff. We'll just get right into the context. But yeah, we thought it would be kind of fun just to get that immediate reaction, like what's going on. And then our plan is that at the end of the series, we are going to get together with Marilyn R. Pakila, who is not only our favorite Tolkien scholar, but also a bit of a history buff herself. And, you know, she was a professional research librarian in her professional life. So stay tuned for details on when that's going to get scheduled and when we are going to have that episode out. For this week, we're going to do one podcast every night, except for tomorrow night, Monday.
Yes.
Because I actually have to go to Boston on a day trip and go through some of the territory that this exact episode covered.
That's right.
But I've got a business meeting there, and then I probably won't get back. I don't know. Maybe I'll be able to watch it on the train back out.
Okay.
So we'll figure out what we do from there. Maybe we'll compress it or we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
What else do I have here on the thing? Feedback for this project is going to be our generic email address, lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Keep an eye on our blog at thelorehounds.com. Brian is actually our editor in chief of our blog. And if you have anything you'd like to say, we do have an open submission policy. And so Brian will help you facilitate that. But I think Brian, you said you've got maybe you can feel your fingertips itching to maybe crank out a couple of posts.
Yeah. I think we'll get the ball started, especially with tonight's huge amount of content.
Right. Huge amount.
Huge amount.
As always, everyone is welcome to join us on our community Discord. We've got a channel set up for the American Revolution in our sort of television thread area. As always, please, if you want to support the podcast and all of the creators that we work with, subscribe. And check out all of the affiliate podcasts. There's links for everything in the show notes. There's a link tree. It's got all the stuff. Brian, why don't you clue us in a little bit to your professional background? Because this is, I think you work in a little bit more of a more modern age, but you still are a history person. So why don't you explain to us all what it is that you're trained in and what you actually work in?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, David, for doing this and inviting me on. This is a real pleasure. So I hold advanced degrees in history and, like Marilyn, library science.
Okay.
I currently work in presidential and political history of America, and that is the modern times, basically from the 1980s to today. But I also was a National Park Service ranger.
So was I.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was law enforcement. I'm guessing you were interpretive? Or
yes. That's right. Yeah, the James Garfield home in Ohio.
Awesome.
But more relevant to this podcast and this show, I was research librarian at Monticello.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I worked at Monticello, and I consulted at Montpelier, home of James Madison.
Okay.
So I have kind of that background. I worked at a couple other presidential sites as well. And so I kind of dabble in all kinds of centuries of political history.
Right. Perfect.
And the show is a little different, right, as you were alluding to, David, what we usually do. But we wanted to do this not because it's Burns is iconic, but the show, I think, is going to be a gateway to the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution, right, which is already happening now in some communities, but also is going to be huge next year. And many community members, some already are like Alicia, who was born here in the States, but living abroad. There's other people who are living abroad, but lived in America or born in America. And of course, the American people in our community, they're going to be exposed to the celebration through maybe shows, movies, local events in their community. And I imagine the July 4th of next year is going to be like off the charts mm-hmm. for a lot of people in town. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Got it. And part of the reason we wanted to talk about the show, because this is not our normal bread and cheese that we cover here, right? Or bowls of cereal that we like to consume, is because a lot of the stories and television shows and movies and things that we cover, it's story, right? It's about story, and it's about the experience. Wait for it. The human heart in conflict with itself.
So much conflict. Favorite.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of that involves history and historicity, right? The practice of telling stories of histories, right? There is a just like memory is reconstructive, history is reconstructive. We're always relearning the details and recreating it and reconstructing it in a modern context, in a context of today. That's which right. Then leads to mythology. And yes. We hear very much about the mythology in the Lorehounds community.
That's right.
And that's why we thought, oh gosh, we should talk to Marilyn, because this is about myth. Yeah. And I am not a historian. I'm just a guy with a microphone. And I have an average American educational background and an understanding of the history of the country, which I call home, and am a proud member, conflicted at times, when our government does things that I don't know that I necessarily agree with. But the idea that Ken Burns is bringing the show, and I, as I understand it, they did not intend this for to be released around the 250th anniversary. They just started doing the story because, oh my gosh, we have to do this story.
Yeah, this was 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah. And as they started working on it, they realized, oh, this may line up. And the other weird thing is that it's also lining up with a whole bunch of deeply challenging things that are happening politically in our country right now.
That's right.
And so it's this kind of a timely thing. And we wanted to examine this because it is a very lorehoundy thing for us, even though it's not laser beams and dragons and or prestige television. We don't really do documentary stuff. Spoilers, spoiler warning for this show. Who wins?
That's right.
So I think that's part of what was the motivation, and I think for me some of the motivation too was to learn some of the history that I didn't know. The messier history.
Yeah.
We have a mythology about the Paul Revere and Franklin and, all these other founding fathers. We have a whole generation of kids now whose primary framework of their political history is set to a hip hop musical.
Yeah.
Which is on constant rotation in my house right now. My daughter is like full into it.
My daughter as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, indulge me with a minor anecdote here. I started watching it, screen off 7:30 in our house. My daughter's screen off time is 7:30. And then she's got to be in bed sort of 8:39, right? And getting to sleep. And so she had some laundry to fold, which she doesn't normally do, without a lot of prompting and she spontaneously started folding her laundry on the back of the couch, standing behind me watching as the show is playing. And she was hearing names and places and, we live in New England. And so all this stuff. And she got really, she's 10 years old and she's like really engaged and primed. And I think Hamilton has primed her a lot for receiving some of this history.
Yeah.
But anyway, the idea of, hey, there was a lot more going on during the revolution than this mythology that we have of all of the, of these brave colonists, dumping some tea and then throwing the British out. It was a lot more complex and a lot more messy. And there's a lot more to discuss and understand the roots of our country's history and some of our tendencies that are really deeply buried in here that come out quite often in times of stress and in times of change.
Exactly. Well said. And the other thing, we get out of the stories, it seemed to be inevitable that we would have freedom. We would win, but that is not true. Right. So all the decisions they're trying to make is in the moment, and we don't know what's going to happen. So, this tit for tat, for example, that we see in this episode really shows, like, Parliament does things and some of the colonists do things, then the Parliament responds and then the colonists respond, and it's back and forth, and it gets really, really messy.
Right. So to help us through each night, you came up, you can talk about this in a little second, a bit of a template so that we're not just swimming around in, oh, I like this and I didn't, whatever, that we have a little format that we can follow, and that helps us organize our thoughts. And then gives the podcast a little bit of structure. I'm just going to run the questions really quick so people can know what to expect. And then you can talk a little bit about where you got this and, yeah. and how we're going to use it. And then you can kind of lead us through the questions as we interrogate the text, such as it was on screen. So the questions we have are, what things stood out? What did you like? What did you dislike? What would you want to know more about? Did this really happen? And what are the stories Burns is telling? And how well did he tell it? So where did this come? This template came from somewhere else.
Yes, I cannot take full credit. And I was listening to a longtime Civil War blogger and podcaster historian, Kevin Levin, who does Civil War Memory Podcast. And he did an actual episode coming up before the Burns episode tonight. And he said, you know, have a piece of paper next to you while you're watching this with maybe some of these questions. And I really liked those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this might be a good way for the two of us to kind of navigate this complex world that we're documentary that we're going to see. So that's hats off to Kevin for that one.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the idea of having it because otherwise we could just sort of
go all randomly over the place.
Talk about it. Yeah. And it's a lot of material.
It is so much. Yeah. You forget. It's like, oh, it's only 2 hours, you know, whatever. Mm. Wow.
Yeah. I kind of wish it was a 12-week series, you know, one a week. You know, from a podcaster standpoint, that would be the selfish thing that I would appreciate.
Oh, I was telling, 100%.
I had to get my daughter to bed. It was getting close on 9, and I was like, okay, this is 12 hours. It's 6 episodes. Once the episodes have aired, because she's not used to the idea of episodes airing, you know, because everything's streaming.
Everything's streaming.
I was like, we can watch this, you know, as a family, as one of our family viewing things at any time. And she was like, I don't want to go to bed. And I'm like, it's going to be there. Don't worry. We're going to watch more of it. So
that's right.
So that said, let's get into it. Episode 1, In Order to Be Free. Covering the years 1754 to 1775. So why don't you lead us through?
Okay. So our first question is, what things stood out? Mm-hmm. And do you want to go for it there?
Sure. And this is going to contrast a little bit with what I quote unquote disliked later on, because he starts the series. I should say they, because it's not just Ken Burns. There's several other people involved. They start the series out centering it on Native American history and people in place. And so it's like, okay, right. There were people here before all of these Europeans showed up. Great. That's a really important thing to know. And later we get some perspective on the Daughters of Liberty and how women were a very important part of the revolution, and how some of this general strike related type of activity and boycotting would not have happened without women taking center of that. We obviously chattel slavery is spoken about, and we don't go into detail in slavery, just that it's this very important economic engine for the empire, for the British Empire and for the colonies, not only the North American colonies, but the Caribbean colonies. And so they lay out those fundamental elements, and we can talk about this a little bit more, but it nods to the fact that it's not just a bunch of North American aristocracy landed, gentry, wizened men who, you know, they play an important part into a lot of it. I didn't realize the extent of the land speculation that was going on.
Yeah, it's huge.
And how that was lined the pockets of some of our founding fathers. We're not here to burn whatever. We're here to interrogate the history and learn more about it. And I think that's what was the thing that stood out, was that they start to lay out that foundation that there's more going on here than just this, you know, mytho history.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I also wrote down that connects right with what you're saying is that diversity in the 13 colonies. And what I mean by that, right, the diversity that we see, the voices, so the Native Americans, the women, slave owners, also class, you know, the gentry, but also the working people, the trades craftsmen, they all cover, they are in this big pot of what we call the colonies. And then what's different between the southern colonies versus like New England, right? They don't know each other. Of course, we know that we take for granted travel today, but they didn't travel much to Virginia. You know, Virginia, these colonies were pretty isolated, with the exception of some of the, you know, they mentioned the main ports of Philadelphia, New York City, and what's the third one? It's the I think it's Norfolk.
Okay.
And then down towards South Carolina. So, you know, there's very few port cities. Mm-hmm. So you're just living in a very isolated world, and you just don't understand one each other very well. So right. You do have that diversity of culture and customs and people. So it's the human condition.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. What's next?
All right. What did we like?
What did we like? I like actually kind of dovetailing on just what you were saying is that the scope and scale of the geography, because we're talking all the way from Montreal to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And they make a good point early on. They make this point several times. And just like you were saying, what was going on in New England environmentally and what was going on in the South, you know, in the Carolinas and in Spanish Florida, and very different. And as you were saying, there's not a lot of, you know, all the trade is going back to England.
Yeah.
Or to France or to Spain, you know. And so it's all outbound. It's not intra. There's not a lot of intra trading and engagement. And yeah, what's going on in New Hampshire and Maine? What does that have to do with a Virginian?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's this diversity of people as well, like you're saying, socioeconomically and religiously and, you know, Native Americans to all of these Europeans who are coming over. But yet it's still, you know, at some point there's a land rush and people start pouring into the country. But even by those standards, like Massachusetts to me, when I drive through, I'm right next door to it in Vermont. It's just one giant suburb almost,
right?
It's so well settled, right? Vermont is this weird little state where there's still, you know, all the land is owned, but they haven't built on it like New Hampshire has. Right? So we're still very wooded and rural, you know, even though it was all clear cut at one point. But this area is now heavily, heavily stated in some of our largest and most impacted urban centers are here. You know, you think of Philadelphia, you know, the greater Philadelphia area, New York, obviously Boston.
Yeah.
But that there is this massive diversity and this huge scope. And so that plays a role into when I was thinking about this, that plays a role into, well, why isn't Britain just in control? Or why are they chasing? Why is everybody chasing each other around? Because it's a really big landscape. It's a really rugged landscape. And from Montreal to Florida, you have a lot of geographic and environmental diversity. And I thought that they did without going really deep into that, they did a nice job of setting that up as a context for the drama that's about to play out.
Yeah, exactly. And I really like how Burns uses maps and animation.
Yes.
So they can show us what's going on, especially across that 1763 boundary, past the Allegheny Mountains into Ohio and Tennessee. And
is that the prohibition that the king said that, hey, you can't go settle these lands.
Can't go settle there. But there's another map. I don't know if you caught this one, David. It was really quick. But I've seen it before that the states, there's like a large, you know, map of the colonies, and their boundaries go all the way west, which is true. They you know, I think it took places like in Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is going to be our state and we're going to colonize this.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and I think when there was one of the historians was like, you know, there's the political nature of maps and the, what's the word I want to say? They're kind of a wish fulfillment, you
yeah.
know, that we're, you know, we're going to, this is going to be ours, right?
Yes.
It is ours and it will be ours.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And as you alluded to as well with this geography and this land, you know, some of our biggest founding fathers speculated in the land, including Washington yes. and Jefferson. They were also, Jefferson and Washington were surveyors. Mm-hmm. So they had a twofer. They could bring their cash on hand and they could do some surveying and get some choice property.
Which boggles my mind because by whose authority are you purveying this land that you're reselling it? Like you really are. You're taking land that's already occupied and already known and already utilized and then just appropriating it for yourself by the fact that you just are saying, I now own this land and I paid yeah. some, I might have paid some filing fee at a clerk's office.
Yeah.
But now it's my land and now that's I right. have the right to resell it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's wild to me. That's just wild.
Yeah.
And the whole thing that we see in this episode too is this land rush.
Yes.
This, and they talk about it in the show is that you're fixed, you're locked in. If you're in Europe, you're in England, you're in France, but wherever, you're locked into hereditary, to social, to generations upon generations. Of whose land you're on and yeah. how your productivity, if you're a laborer, how your productivity is moving up the chain, right? And you are, it's extractive, right? The wealth yeah. is being extracted up to the point that it's, I made this in my notes, enshittification has long been going on in the sense that I'm going to maximize profit and decrease the value of the goods or services that I'm providing, right? To yeah. the point that I'm almost compromising it. And there's this idea that landowners at that time were just vampirically sucking the lifeblood out of the people who were working the land to the point that you had no quote unquote freedom or liberty for yourself, and you were That's not right. your children. You would never see anything but servitude, and nor would your children. And so, when a whole new continent opens up,
yeah,
where as and of course, I only know this from the Hamilton musical, when Washington says, "You know, I want to sit under my own vine,"
yeah,
right,
yeah,
this idea that hey, I could go out and have liberty in this place where I can my labors are. For me.
Yeah.
That's and right. my family. And I can build that up. Man, that's attractive.
That's Phew. Usually attractive. Yeah. Right. All the Irish, the Scottish, mm-hmm. Leaving Europe, leaving the Great Britain and heading to get their own plots of land. And people in New England, their farmland is pretty much tapped out mm-hmm. and they've subdivided it so many times
exactly.
for their family, right? Right? That they're itching to go west too. So mm-hmm. you have a real mad rush and you'd see why the British really had a handful trying to control the situation past the Allegheny Mountains about all these settlers who started fighting the Native Americans, the Native mm-hmm. Americans fighting them. And it was horrible. It was a really bad, tough experience.
And that idea that, well, we need to keep you on this side because, well, that's how our gunboat diplomacy is going to work. You know, yeah. if we want to be able to control you and put in new taxes and do all this kind of stuff, you need to be under our authority. But if you're on the other side of those mountains way out there, well,
we don't,
the further away you get from us, the less control we have.
Exactly. Exactly. Britain had, I think, out in that area west of that line before it became the 1763 line, mm-hmm. I think there was like two or three British officers and agents, and that was it. I mean, it was crazy.
Going to add something to my what I liked.
Yeah,
I liked the fact that they were clear that these were settled lands, and these were there were tribes and nations and confederacies of nations.
Yes,
you know, the Six Nation tribe. You know, I don't have all the names in my head. I apologize. It's late, but all of the different Native American tribes, and some of them who were just sort of individual and isolated, other ones that were big confederations. Yeah. You know, they actually had
trade
and mutual defense treaties, and you know, really sophisticated democracies.
Yeah,
in some regards, that you know, he said now. If we can kind of slide a little bit into the dislike.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought we were going to get more of that, and we didn't.
Yes. I know. I was surprised, too. I, you know, especially as you said, right from the first, right at the beginning, the first quote was a Native American.
Right.
And it's like, oh, great. This is awesome. And it kind of slipped away. But
yeah,
because there's a lot, you know, as we know, there was a lot of history leading up to the 1750s, you know, of course, the Seven Years' War, but even, you know, the 1760s and 70s, about the story that hasn't been told, I think, as effectively as it could.
Right. And you have a note here in your dislike column about timeline being compressed.
Yeah. And I think that relates exactly to what we were saying. It's, it's even though it's six episodes, what, were 12 hours, that felt fast, and there are moments in the America leading up to the American Revolution that it does go fast, right? There's like a year or two, and then you know the tit for tat that I was telling you about with Parliament and the colonies, but then there's also like 10 years pass or 5 or 8 years pass, and what's going on here, you know? What, you know, is it quiet or is it really, or wasn't it quiet, right? So we still feel compressed, I think, a little fast.
Right.
Yeah.
At the same time, it was soporific. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
It was, I was really fighting falling asleep in the last 40 minutes or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is... It's Ken Burns, and it is a Ken Burns pace, and it has a Ken Burns voice to it, and it has a tone, and even though there are a number of other creative voices on this, it is still a product of, you know, as known as Ken Burns product.
Yeah.
And one of my dislikes was that pacing and that tone never varied no matter what was going on. And I think I, as a consumer of a lot of television and some degree movies, I would have enjoyed them picking up the pace a little bit here, picking up the tempo, injecting a little bit of energy into it, and then, or slowing it down because we're going to get into some detail or not a lot was happening here. Like the storytelling flow doesn't aid the drama and tension and the buildup of attention and release that's happening in the story of this history. And if they had done that, I think I would have felt a little less sleepy by the end of it.
Yeah. And related to that, just thinking about it, you know, a lot of other Ken Burns programs, the talking heads, the historians or the commentators, they tell more stories, like in the Civil War and baseball that I've seen. They draw them out. They really are great storytellers, and I didn't get that vibe yet from these historians yet.
Right. They're just kind of straight to camera.
Here it is. You know, I'm on 5 seconds, 10 seconds, and then I move on to the portraits or the maps.
Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I don't know that I liked much was, did we need A-list movie stars for the voiceovers? Does Meryl Streep add something? Does Tom Hanks add more to that particular role?
Yeah, you know, you could find, I don't think so. I mean, I guess it's part of the Burns brand, right? To have these A-listers. But as we know from consumers of good audiobooks, as Lorehound's folks are, we know great narrators. You could have someone just as powerful.
We have a whole industry of amazing voice actors and actors who do specialize in voice as well.
So. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little over the top, I think, a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And my final dislike was the type of media making it hard to capture reality, war, and life. You know, of course, it's not like Vietnam, right? You didn't have, you know, pictures, you didn't have video or audio, but, you know, the material they used, you know, like Sam Adams, what a great portrait of Sam Adams. Mm-hmm. But what we know about Sam Adams in reality is that the guy, there's a reason probably he's named after a beer, is because he was a failed brewmaster. Mm-hmm. He drank a lot. So,
and it turns out he was a master propagandist.
Yeah, exactly.
According to the show. And I was like, huh, did he get beer washed? Did he get hop washed? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. So the portraits you see are a different, you know, are the artist's view. Mm. And also, I'm sure there's probably input from the person who's being painted, right? I want to be, you know, looking good. And we know that this time period, it's smelly, it's loud, there's a lot of disease, there's a lot of drunkenness.
it's a brutal time to be alive.
It is. It is. And you just don't see that in these kinds of medium that he's using.
But interesting. Okay.
The type of medium. Yeah. The portraits.
Right. We're not seeing the horses shitting in the streets.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so the crushing poverty and a harsh winter and how that would devastate a family and the living conditions. Yeah. We're just seeing these clean portraits and these clean maps.
Yeah.
And then these beautiful drone shots over, you know,
fields,
sunlit building tops and things like that. So it's very sanitized what we're getting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
And I knew that they were bringing in reenactors. So that's what I was thinking. It's like, oh, let's see if we can get a little more reality in there. But I guess it's kind of part of the Burns package.
Right. Yeah. And they're doing a lot of reenact. They filmed a lot of reenactment stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Of people. It's a huge thing. I didn't realize it was like that big.
Yeah. Lots of locations too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I mean, there's a whole thousands. I mean, they're LARPing, right?
Yeah.
What we would call, right?
Exactly.
They're all dressing up and as redcoats or as patriots or, you know, and going out with their muskets and there's thousands of them all over the place. So
that's right. Okay. Are we any more on dislikes? Should we move on? Okay. What would you want to know more about? Did you have anything for this?
You know, I was trying to think about what I wanted to know more. And I think it's just about the early colonies. I really felt like I didn't get enough early colonial thing. And then sort of the second hour of this, I don't want to slide back into dislikes, but it was like a lot of information I kind of already knew. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, the Revere thing and this and that.
Yeah, Lexington Concord.
Yeah. Okay, I kind of got all of this, right? And I was, so what I wanted to know more about is the details of the early colonies and what was going on in a lot of those places. But this is the American Revolution television show, so I kind of get that, right?
Right.
This isn't about the colonies. So.
Yeah. And for me, it was a couple things. I was interested in the Native American policy before the war, kind of what you were saying, some of the life, early colonial life. But the British had a certain policy. You know, they wanted to, I think, they were more friendly, I think, with the Native Americans, and they were there longer than the colonists were. So it'd be interesting to learn more about that. And then I think the mob violence. You know, that's one of the themes that is coming out of this episode is so much violence and the mobs burning and tar and feather. And it was brutal. I'd like to learn more about that.
They talk about how, too, democracy was not a the word democracy that we have now is this sort of mytho-heroic democracy. It's the, right? Democracy for them was terrible because it was matched with demagoguery. And you could inflame the passions of the mob. And that it wasn't a good thing. And there is a lot of mob violence in our history. All the way up. You know, I'm all thinking all the way up. You know, through Tulsa and other things. We haven't had a when we had the Brooks Brothers mob, I suppose, in the last. But we haven't had a good deal of mob violence in quite a while. But it is a deep, deep part of our psyche and on our history.
It is one of those threads that is. Basically, in every decade,
right.
Probably, if you look hard enough.
Yeah, something else I was thinking of too that I'd like to know more about is they allude to it and they talk a little bit about it, but what was going on with the French and what was going on with the Spanish at the same time, because the Spanish were down in Florida and the French were up in Montreal, and those were very important, colonial stakes for them, and there were some wars and tensions, but we missed a lot of that in this thing. You know, and something else too is maybe they could have set up the European history a little bit, sort of like the monarch. You know, we're rewriting the show in the background here. Maybe we should do that, but because what does happen with the American Revolution has a shockwave around the world. So
it's a global war. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to kind of because he kind of glosses over the Seven Years' War.
Right.
Faster than I thought. And it's like, that's huge for the colonists. Very big thing. And we just kind of moved on quickly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What else do you got?
That's it about the wanting to know more.
Okay.
Did this really happen? I don't have much.
I didn't have anything either because it's Ken Burns.
Ken Burns,
I would assume that everything is really well researched here.
Yeah, I think this would be a light. This question might be light, but we'll put these questions in the Discord and maybe people will throw up something, as well.
Well, maybe rather than just the veracity of a fact, like, oh my God, what are things that surprised us or that we didn't think of rather than just did it really happen?
Yeah.
And for me, one of the things that really surprised me was like, damn, George Washington, that he survived the as a young soldier and in a militia commander and the Seven Years' War and like all that he survived through all the way through the Revolutionary War is astounding.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know how many other men who had as many battles and engagements as he had lived to tell those tales then to go on to be the first president of the United States. So,
because he was there in Seven Years' War, the front lines. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon to get shot or killed. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you're taken as a prisoner of war. A couple British generals actually got caught and were traded later on. And that's going to happen in the American Revolution. There's got a lot of people are going to be taken by prisoner of war and they may be exchanged. He was very lucky.
Right.
Very lucky. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we should change this to the things that we're surprised by or excited by rather than
that really happened.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Given the caliber of this.
Cool. Okay. What are the story or stories Burns is telling and how well did he tell it?
So I guess he definitely is telling the mythology of the American Revolution. In this episode, we get the Boston Tea Party, such as it is. Yeah. I'm going to be there tomorrow. There's actually a little boat in the little harbor area, and they have like crates that are tied to ropes, and you can throw them off, and then they have the ropes so that you can haul them back up. It's very
the British
funny.
Show a lot of that.
Yeah, when the Disneyfication of national culture, it's really funny.
Yeah.
So we're getting creation myth stuff here.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And values, right? He's telling the value of the land.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. We have, I think, also, I wrote down you, the story is also, I don't know if it's intentional, but I just, what resonated the story, one of the stories that resonated with me was the violence. And you have to use violence in a revolution to make it work, right? There's very few nonviolent revolutions that are successful, right? If you think about French Revolution, that's going to happen after this one, the Bolshevik Revolution in China. I mean, and even in today, it is, you know, yeah, it kind of gets sanitized, or you just don't capture it when you're sitting in high school or whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, there was this battle and we won and then we moved on. And, you know, and it's like the story is about the hardship of violence. And even toward the end, we had this refugees, right, in Boston, which was really good. That's another story, part of the hardship and violence in revolution. So that's an interesting story.
Have you listened to the Revolutions podcast at all?
I have not.
Okay. I've dipped into it a little bit. I heard about it post Andor coverage or when we were covering the Andor show.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty interesting as a podcast. He does these short episodes, but he goes really in depth, and you know, he's got short ones on a lot of them, and he covers a lot of the revolutions. And then he even creates a fake revolution on Mars, on the colony of Mars, to try to illuminate some of the things and patterns that he sort of observed by doing all this revolution analysis. So
I'll have to take a look.
Interesting. Cool. Well, I think if that's it, I think we can get out of here.
I think so. I think we covered it.
Cool. So Lorehounds at thelorehounds.com. Join us on the Discord. I'm not going to do all of the thank yous that we normally do at the end of a podcast. So to our Discord server boosters, thank you so much. And to our lore masters, especially, thank you. You all know who you are. Even you, Brian, know who you are. And we couldn't do it without your support. If you want to get in touch with us, again, Lorehounds at thelorehounds.com. Blog posts coming, I'm sure. And Linktree for all of the affiliates and all of that kind of stuff. And we will be back at you on Tuesday. And we'll figure out sort of, I don't know how much time I'll have to watch things and whatnot. I'm going to go check actually to see if the episode 2 is already released.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If not, I'll kind of fill you in before we get into the third episode.
Sounds good. All right, Brian, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.